Hi, everybody. Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. We have to get out the sweaters and the long johns now for the late night and early morning temperatures. They are very chilly. Near 50 outlying areas, near 60 here in town. We will see the mid to upper 80s right on throughout the weekend and the first half of next week. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 79 degrees.
Lars Larson, weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
Although you will be receiving good advice from our hosts, please remember that this is not therapy and should not replace a relationship with a qualified mental health professional.
This is Life. Here now, your host, Dr. Howard Gluss, Ph.D.
Hello and welcome to the show. And here we are to look at the psychology behind our news and culture. We have an exciting show coming up. Our first half of the show, we're going to look at sex trafficking and human slavery in America. And our special guest is going to be author Ron Sudalter. And for the second half of the show, we're going to look at HIV and a cure for HIV, specifically a concept called HIV controllers. This is a very tiny group of people. There's about 300 recorded people that are actually immune to the HIV virus that have HIV and have never developed the illness of AIDS around it, but always test positive. And there's only about 300 recorded people that we know of, and we're going to actually have someone on who is one of those persons, and her name is Lauren Willenberg. She's a longtime survivor, activist, and speaker on the subject. She's going to talk about how she's been used as a human experiment and her feelings towards that, and also how she feels that she can contribute to a cure for AIDS. So we're going to have a very exciting show. Let's get started. As I said, the first half of the show is going to be on sex trafficking and human slavery. My guest is Ron Sudalter. As I said, he's a historian, artist, educator, and author. He has two books out. One is called Hanging Captain Gordon, and his new book is The Slave Next Door. With that, I want to give him a warm welcome.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gluss. Pleasure to be here.
Ron, you know, I was reading an article in the paper today, a very interesting article, and it talked about how Hillary Clinton has come out to talk recently about trafficking. There was a report that was done called the Persons Report. And then she mentions a lot of countries that are considered to be guilty of human trafficking, human slavery, etc. What I found that was interesting, though, is she didn't talk about what's going on here in the United States, which is your focus.
Yes,
so I wonder if you can comment on that, because when we think of slave trafficking, we think of other countries and we don't think of ourselves. So I think you're about to tell us that we are also guilty of this crime.
Very much so, Dr. Gluss. I think the report you're talking about, the Trafficking in Persons Report, comes out every year. It's put out by the State Department, the Office to Monitor and Combat Human Trafficking. And it's basically a report card on all the nations of the world, granting them a an assignment to a specific level, a tier, tier one, tier two, tier three, depending upon the severity with which we view how they approach their own trafficking problems. And up until last year, we judged, and I use the word advisedly, judged every country in the world except one, and that was ourselves. Last year, we actually came out with a report card on the United States, and it was pretty straightforward and pretty honest, and it showed exactly where our deficiencies lie. But yes, the United States has always been a destination for slave traders, and in the modern age, it is a bastion for human traffickers and modern-day slavers.
Define those terms for our audience, what you mean by human trafficking and modern-day slavery.
Well, the idea of trafficking, human trafficking, is the act of putting a person into a slavery situation. And when we say slavery, we may not be talking about what occurred before the Civil War. It was a different kind of slavery, Howard. Before the Civil War, you found that slavery was open, it was public, it was a sign of wealth, a sign of status. Slaves cost, in 1850, say, the equivalent of $40,000 or $50,000 in today's money apiece. Nowadays, slavery is illegal, so it's a hidden crime. Slaves can be purchased for as little as $100, and it cuts across the broad spectrum of American life. I know when you introduced the show, you had mentioned sex trafficking, and sadly, I think when Americans are aware of modern-day slavery, they think of it in terms of sex slavery only, and that is because of the focus that's been put on it both by the Bush administration and by Hollywood. I think movies and television dramas tend to focus on sex because, let's face it, it's glitzier. But in point of fact, labor trafficking gathers more victims of modern-day slavery than sex trafficking does, according to a federal government's report.
So give
the TIP
me,
report,
give me,
which
give
you
me
mentioned.
I'm sorry, Ron. Give me a sense of what that means when you say labor trafficking or sex trafficking. I mean, these people are brought to this country. I'm grouping them together, but they're brought illegally, and then they're held captive as a... I mean, just give us a sense of
what Well, quite
of what
frequently
you're
what
about.
Happens, Howard, is someone in his or her own country finding it impossible to survive economically will want to come to the United States, and so there will be someone there to say, well, okay, you give me $6,000, $7,000, and I will get you to the United States. I'll sneak you in. I'll get you in either through an airport with false papers or across a border. But one way or another, I'll get you into the country, and you're free to go to work. These people often fork over the life savings, go into massive debt to these people who make them promises they have no intention of keeping. And when they get to this country, they are told, oops, you owe another $4,000 or $6,000 or whatever. It's a made-up number, and these people are forced to work in whatever circumstances the trafficker allots, whether it be a brothel or a laundry or a restaurant in some
or
major cities.
Or farming fields, et cetera.
Or fields, yeah. Agriculture is one of the three biggest bastions of modern-day slavery, and that occurs all over the country. There have been cases of modern-day slavery in every state of the Union.
So, I mean, I'm trying to imagine this, and what stops someone once they get here from just reporting the crime and then, you know, trying to set themselves free, et cetera?
That's an excellent question. A number of things. First of all, traffickers will often confiscate a person's papers, passport, visa, whatever, and... Also, these people frequently don't speak English. They have no idea that there's anywhere they can run to. They are geographically at sea. They have been told by their traffickers that if they go to the police, they will be arrested, beaten, and or deported. And oftentimes, they feel honor-bound to pay this imaginary debt they're told that they owe. So there are any number of reasons. Primarily, they have no idea there's anybody out there to go to.
So in some respects, you're saying it's our responsibility, too, to make people aware in other countries, make them aware here,
Absolutely.
That what's happening to them is illegal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In various languages, in the various places where it might occur. Often people are brought to emergency rooms and hospitals when they're abused. If people in the emergency rooms are made aware of what to look for, signs put up in various places such as truck stops. It's amazing what can be done with awareness. And I think people say to me, what is the biggest stumbling block in the fight against modern-day slavery? And I have to say it is a lack of awareness. People have no clue what to look for.
I'm going to add something to that because I thought of that also from a psychological point of view. I wonder if part of the biggest obstacle we're facing is a sense of denial, that as Americans we just don't
Absolutely.
Want to believe Mm-hmm. that this is going on.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm wondering, you know, because it seems so impossible that in this country that is so fundamentally based on freedom that mm-hmm. we would have this problem. It's very difficult to wrap your head around it.
Yes, it is. And for Americans, especially older Americans, I find, who have been brought up with the concept of the land of the free and the home of the brave, to hear that there has always, always been slavery on this continent since Columbus, and that it still exists, it's stunning, it's staggering, it's more than many people's minds can wrap around. I have had people challenge me to my face and say, how dare you speak so against our government. I love our government. I love our country. I have great respect for our country and the principles upon which it's based, but facts are facts. And unless we acknowledge this, we're not going to be able to defeat it.
And where in this country is it foremost when we talk about slavery? Are there specific areas that we see a lot more than others?
There are bastions of, and I use the word bastions, there are centers of modern-day slavery in our major cities, especially in transportation hubs, places like St. Louis, New York City, Houston, Los Angeles, and also there is slavery in the country, in our towns, in our fields, and as you mentioned, in agriculture, a very, very major area of modern-day slavery.
And, you know, again, I'm wondering, you know, as a country, I mean, are we doing enough, in your opinion, to talk to other countries to stop this kind of trade from going on?
I think the efforts are being made. With the new administration, a man was appointed the ambassador at large in the Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking. His name is Luis de Baca. And de Baca was a special prosecutor in trafficking cases for the State Department. He was a special counsel to the House of Representatives. And as they say, he walks it like he talks it. And he is sincere. Secretary of State Clinton is sincere. She has come out against human trafficking since she became Secretary of State. However, if you ask me, do I think enough is being done? Excuse me, clearly not.
Well, obviously, that's why you wrote your book. So why don't you, to make us aware, and that's what I love about your book, is
that is true. That
you made us so aware of something that's very difficult for all of us to grapple with, is your focus on slavery in this country, the book The Slave Next Door. If people wanted to get a copy of your book, Ron, how could they do so?
They could order it through Amazon, go online, and it's available to them, either in hardcover or in the revised, updated paperback that came out last year. The book came about, Howard, because at the end of a book I wrote on historic slavery and the historical slave trade, I needed a last chapter, and this was back in 2004, and I was absolutely stunned when I discovered that there was and is modern-day slavery in America. And I thought, what better thing than a chapter on modern-day slavery in our own country? When I finished that, I realized that there was no book specifically donated to or dedicated to the subject of modern-day slavery in our own country. So I asked my friend Kevin Bales, who's president of Free the Slaves, if he would co-author one with me. And the result was a three-year effort, and it's The Slave Next Door. To date, I believe it's still the only book in the country that specifically addresses human trafficking and slavery in today's America.
Yeah, and I do want to mention that again, that I did want to give Kevin Bales a mention, that he's also co-author on the book. And to my awareness, too, Ron, it's the only book that covers it in such depth. You know, I was wondering, from a psychological point of view, you can share this with me after the break, but your own personal feelings that came up when you were reading this. And I can't imagine reading it and not feeling a tremendous amount of rage. But we'll talk about that after the break. I'm Dr. Howard Gluss. If you want to email me, it's drhowardgluss@live.com. You can always listen to this show on podcast at radiodrgluss.com.
For your organization or business to survive in these challenging times, you'll need cutting-edge information. The Keylight Company is a psychological business consultation firm. Keylight offers executive coaching, organizational development, seminars, ghostwriting services, and public speaking. Mention KFNX and receive a 20% discount. For business consultation, call the Keylight Company today, 323-935-5775. That's 323-935-5775.
Every day's a holiday in Healthy Habit Health Food Store, 6029 North 7th Street. Tune in to Healthy House Call discussing the latest breakthroughs of integrative medicine. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 a.m. and call with your questions, 602-266-1000. Discover world-class physicians, medical researchers, Hollywood celebrities, professional athletes, and testimonials from our patients and consumers of natural products. Call 602-266-1000.
Find ideas for your home, inspiring art, and entertainment for the kids at the Scottsdale Home Art and Garden Show, coming November 5th and 6th at Westworld Scottsdale.
Shop and compare hundreds of home and remodeling companies, and see Arizona's largest landscaping competition.
Visit the Kids Zone for face painting, fall crafts, and petting zoo.
Enjoy local musicians and shop the Art Expo, featuring local and regional artists.
It's the Scottsdale Home Art and Garden Show, November 5th and 6th at Westworld of Scottsdale.
Discounted tickets and directions at exposaz.com.
Do you own a home that is upside down or underwater? Every person has a unique situation, and that's why you need someone who understands distressed properties, foreclosure alternatives, and the local real estate market. So if you are late on your payments, or about to be, or have received a notice of foreclosure, act now. Get up to $3,000 under the government's HAFA program. Feel free to call 602-753-2900, 602-753-2900, rescottaz.com.
I'm Dr. Howard Glass, and we're back with my guest, Ron Sudlotter. Ron, before the break, I asked you a personal question. As you were writing this book, what kind of experiences you were experiencing psychologically around your feelings about discovering that this really is a major problem in the United States? And I believe there's so little written and being done about it. I wonder what your thoughts are around it.
I agree. It's as I mentioned earlier, it's a matter of awareness, Howard. And there is no better place than our local police offices, stations, precincts on the local, state, federal levels to train and sensitize our law enforcement individuals to recognize, to go out and look for and recognize and address a trafficking, a slavery situation, as I say, with skill and sensitivity so that the bad guys get punished and the victims are rescued.
In your book, you talk a lot about a lot of personal stories around this, and there's no better way, I believe, as a psychologist, to convince someone of the horrors of this than to describe a real-life situation. So I'm wondering if you could share one with us that will give us a deeper understanding of what we're really talking about.
Well, we, during the course of writing the book, Kevin and I interviewed many, many people, both officials and also survivors of modern-day trafficking. We attended trials. I have been in situations where it's impossible not to weep, not to be furious and want to do something violent, and yet you can't. There was a situation where over 200 Peruvians were imported, smuggled into the United States and brought to Long Island, New York, where they were forced to live in basically in squalor, crammed into basements, and forced to work and not allowed to leave, not allowed to reunite with their families. And I interviewed one woman, and in Spanish, I said to her, "What is it now that stands out most in your mind?" And she says, "She said, I will get to see my daughter, whom I haven't seen in 3 years." And her daughter, I think, was just turning 14. And it's a heartbreak. It really is how people can put fellow human beings into a situation like this with no compassion, nothing going for it except for greed. It boggles the mind.
It really does boggle the mind. When you talked about this and you said Peruvian imports, the first thought that went through my mind, mm-hmm. like we were importing, I don't know, blankets from Peru.
Well, that's exactly how it is. These people are product. They exist specifically to work. They are not allowed to leave, and they're kept by government, by federal definition, under force, fraud, and or coercion. And if any or all of the three can be proven, then somebody's going to jail. But the trick is to find these people, and that's not going to happen until we have a greater effort on the part of law enforcement. And in order to have a greater effort, as I keep saying, we need greater awareness. We need training. And
I also think shows like this give greater awareness, too.
Well, I can't tell you how grateful I am that you're doing this.
Well, I appreciate it very much. Because, you know, to me, it's so fundamental, especially as a psychologist, where I deal with people's emotions and feelings all the time and see the suffering that people have. As I start to imagine the experiences that you've had in dealing with these people, the level of anxiety and depression and probably secondary issues like even suicide and drug addiction that these people must go through, it must be tremendous.
Well, rescuing a victim of human trafficking is only the beginning. And people think, wow, well, once we rescue them, it's a happy ending. In point of fact, these people need all kinds of services once they become survivors, Howard. They need everything from language counseling to job counseling to shelter to food to psychological evals to people to care for them both physically and mentally. And this can go on for a lifetime. And the government at this point in time has put finite limits on how much help these people can get once they're rescued. And it's purely arbitrary and it's totally inadequate. So
curious, immigration-wise, what happens to these people? Do we give them asylum?
Well, if someone, it doesn't matter whether a trafficking survivor is here legally or illegally. They are all entitled to a special visa. It's called a T visa. And that entitles them to stay in the country while they're getting themselves a right and while they're getting put in order, and then they can apply for a more permanent visa. Progress has been made over the last 10 years to the point where they can bring their families over, and it's getting better. It's got a long way to go, but it is improving. In point of fact,
you know, one of the things we had talked about when you and I talked about this situation earlier on is some of the feelings you had towards people that are calling this a myth, that the statistics are wrong, that this crime is not really as bad in this country as people like you say it is. If you had a chance to speak to these people directly, what would you say to them?
What I would say is look deeper into it. I think because we have not found as many cases as we should, it's easy to turn the tail headwise and say, well, you know what? In all likelihood, it doesn't exist. Look at it like this. It's estimated by the federal government that some roughly 17,000 foreign nationals are trafficked into slavery in this country every year. Coincidentally, you have approximately the same number of homicides in America every year. Now, you have in the tens of thousands of homicide detectives all over the country. And yet, when you talk about finding trafficking and slavery cases, the number of police officers who have been trained to do this are in the low hundreds. So it's not surprising that cases are not being discovered. And when they are discovered, it makes the newspapers and it becomes a big hullabaloo, and people point and say, oh, you see, it does exist. If you go to Google on your computer, and I recommend to anyone listening, go to Google on your computer. They have a special news alerts page. Type in the words human trafficking. And every single day, you will automatically receive a page or two of links to newspaper articles in this country and abroad, detailing trafficking issues of the day. There has not been a single day, Howard, where I have not received at least a dozen links to trafficking arrests or cases or schools doing something about it, or a police department being trained, or the government making an announcement on it. It's there. We just don't know we're looking at it.
Well, I think I want to go back to one of my original statements. It's there. We don't know we're looking at it. And when we do know we're looking at it, it's so hard to grapple with. You know, I keep sitting with that concept. And I personally want to go into a state of some sort of denial because I just want to say to you, and I know it's not true. I'm playing sort of devil's advocate. That it just, it can't be that bad. I mean, it's such a... You know, we've done what we got so aware, let's say, of child abuse issues in this country that we've, you know, elevated it to a point that we're very conscious of it, and we've created a lot of laws around it. And I think that's great because we're talking about human dignity and people's rights and their psychological well-being, etc. And we know the damage that sexual abuse, for instance, or child abuse does to someone when they grow up. I think this, again, I think we're just at just touching into really how damaging this is to people. And I want to say damaging to us as a society, and also realizing that it's not just about this crime. There's other crimes that accompany it, but
Absolutely.
The message that we're sending to ourselves and our children if we don't pay more attention to it, that we don't value human life in the way that we should.
Well, you know, Howard, 30 years ago, domestic violence, the concept of domestic violence, was practically non-existent. A policeman would be called to a household disturbance, and rather than approach it as a domestic violence situation, he'd say, oh, come on, you guys, get along. 30 years later, I don't think there's a person listening to this show this evening who isn't aware that domestic violence is a crime and is not to be tolerated. Meanwhile, the fight against modern-day slavery and human trafficking is only around 11 years old. The federal law was first passed in 2000. The Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And yet the word is getting out, and I think this past year has seen more attention paid to the subject of modern-day slavery and human trafficking than in all the years before.
Ron,
so I
we
think
only
we're
have
making
about
progress.
30 seconds left, so if there's something you want to say that you didn't say, now's your chance.
There are a number of people out there who are doing wonderful things to rescue victims and to see that the perpetrators are punished. We need more funding from government, more training, and greater awareness.
Ron, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, and I wish you lots of luck in your work. The book is The Slave Next Door, and I'm Dr. Howard Gless. If you want to email me, it's drhowardgless@live.com. This show and all our shows will be available on podcast at radiodrgless.com.
Laura Ingraham, Neil Bortz, Lou Dobbs, Michael Savage, KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, the voice of the valley.
CNN Radio, I'm Rick Vincent. Cardinals fans react outside Busch Stadium just moments ago. The St. Louis Cardinals have claimed their 11th World Series championship after beating Texas 6-2 in Game 7. Alan Craig is one of the heroes, making a leaping catch in the sixth to take away a home run for the Rangers. He also hit a solo homer in the third. House Republican leaders are laying the groundwork to subpoena internal White House documents regarding the decision to issue federal loan guarantees to Solyndra, a solar energy company that now has filed for bankruptcy. Florida Congressman Cliff Stearns, who chairs a subcommittee on oversight and investigations, says they want more information on White House relations with Solyndra.
After 8 months of investigation, we have a right, and I think the taxpayers have a right, after losing $500 million, to say, what about the internal communications inside the top advisors to the White House? Let's see them.
A House committee will consider the resolution on Thursday. The most trusted name in news, this is CNN Radio.
Hi, everybody. Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. We have to get out the sweaters and the long johns now for the late night and early morning temperatures. They are very chilly. Near 50 outlying areas, near 60 here in town. We will see the mid to upper 80s right on throughout the weekend and the first half of next week. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 77 degrees.
Lars Larson, weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
For your organization or business to survive in these challenging times, you'll need cutting-edge information. The Keylight Company is a psychological business consultation firm. Keylight offers executive coaching, organizational development, seminars, ghostwriting services, and public speaking. Mention KFNX and receive a 20% discount. For business consultation, call the Keylight Company today, 323-935-5775. That's 323-935-5775.
These days, you hear them everywhere. Get out of debt quick promises asking you to call right now to solve all your credit problems. But please, listen carefully. Don't make a huge mistake. There is a better way. Trinity Debt Management. Many debt settlement companies have created a dangerous misunderstanding. Simply put, debt settlement often ends up destroying your credit and ultimately may lead to asset seizure and bankruptcy. There is a better way out. Trinity Debt Management can show you how to pay off your debt, preserve your good name, save thousands in interest, and in the end, actually improve your credit rating, not destroy it. Say no to debt settlement. Say yes to debt management. Trinity Debt Management. Make the right choice and become debt-free for keeps. Call 1-800-758-5360. That's 1-800-758-5360.
Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Glesson. We're back with the show. Every once in a while, I get letters from someone who really moved me. And I got a request a couple of weeks ago from a gentleman asking me if I would have our next guest on, that she was an extraordinary woman. And as I read her story, I couldn't agree with him more. We've been living with HIV and AIDS now in this country for about 30 years, and we still don't have a cure. We're getting closer to much more effective treatments. But there is, as I said earlier on, there is this very small group of people. They're called HIV controllers, and they have a natural immunity to the virus, and they don't produce the disease, and they never need any treatment. And I actually had... mentioned this to a patient that I have that is HIV positive, and I was trying to remember what this group of people was called, and his response to me was, lucky. And that really moved me, that these people are very lucky. And what I love about Lorraine Willenberg that I'm about to have on is she recognized how lucky she was, and instead of being filled with shame or a lack of inertia to do anything about it, she formed the Zephyr Foundation to try to help people understand sort of the science behind people like her. And she became very proactive in trying to search for a cure. So we have to applaud her for that. So with that, I want to welcome her to the show. As I said, her name is Lorraine Willenberg. And as her story goes, she has been HIV positive since 1992. She's an activist now, has no symptoms, and what is called an HIV controller. And when I spoke to someone else about it, actually today, that she was going to be on the show, his response to me was, oh, she's the walking cure to AIDS. Lorraine, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to join you this evening, Dr. Gliss. And indeed, your friend was correct that I believe that there exists valuable clues in the community that I'm a member of, HIV controllers, as you have so kindly introduced the term to your audience. And I also wanted to interject that there's another term that we're also known by, and that is called LTNPs. That's an acronym for long-term non-progressors. And, of course, that non-progressors part of that term infers that these individuals, of which I am one, never progress to disease, or in a majority of the cases, never progress toward AIDS. And it is a fortunate status, and I'm grateful. I'm humbled by the status.
So give us a sense of your story, because to really understand who you are, if you can give us a little history and make us under, and what I got from talking to you, that even you coming forward with this was not an easy process.
No, sir, it was not at all. HIV, unfortunately, remains a highly stigmatized disease, particularly here in the United States. And so when I was diagnosed as positive back in July of 1992, we who work in the field all the time, call it the dark days of the epidemic. As a matter of fact, 1992 was the latter portion of the dark era. 1992 was approximately 4 years before the HIV medications were on the market, and obviously people were suffering and dying terrible deaths. I myself stood by the gravesides of many, many friends during the 80s and the early 90s. So for me personally, this was way, way before anyone knew that there might be a unique group of individuals who keep the virus at bay, so to speak. So in actuality, I would say for me, up until about 1995, after several years of tracking my general, doing my blood draws, seeing my physician, usually for once every quarter, up until about 1995, my physician was able to mention to me that there was something very interesting about my particular case, that typically an individual who was diagnosed with HIV showed very, very high levels of the virus in their bloodstream. I did not do that. And then there was another measurement that they follow, and that has to do with measuring the number of fighter cells. You know, all of us have these fighter cells in our immune systems, and they fight against invaders, in this particular case, HIV. And my particular levels were extremely high, meaning that my immune system was intact, that the virus was indeed not being successful then at dismantling those fighter cells. And so I would say I lived kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop for at least 8 years, until I joined my first clinical research study, and that was 2004.
I can't imagine. That's got to be such a very difficult place for you to have been, because in one sense, you know, it's 1992. There's really no treatment for AIDS. People are dying. If a doctor diagnoses you as HIV positive at that time, he's also saying you'll probably die from this. And on the other hand, you're going into your doctor's office and the disease isn't progressing. And so it's got to be a very kind of confusing time, and wondering.
Yes, it was very confusing. Luckily, my physician had been educated at Stanford, and obviously he was an infectious disease physician and cared for many patients. And I'm grateful to his having mentioned that eventually there would be a clinical research study who focus completely on our unique community. And those words to me in 1995 from my physician were very prophetic. And what was interesting is that I didn't fall into the typical support group. You know, there weren't actually a whole lot of support groups established for HIV-positive women. I did live in the Sierra Nevada foothills during this time, and services were very thin, I guess, to put it plainly, typically oriented to gay men, which I was happy for them that they did have support groups to go to, But frankly, I didn't actually meet another woman who was HIV positive, doctor, until 2005. And I'm not quite sure how I was successful in processing the confusion or the very real fear of becoming ill and possibly losing my life to this infection. But I will say that I planted a lot of trees and shrubs. I was a professional landscaper and a professional landscape designer. I did have I did have employees for my business, and there was something about the connection with nature that seemed to give me both an outlet and a sense of, when you plant bulbs, for example, like daffodil bulbs in the ground, you're looking forward to them the following spring, and it seemed to help me process these fears.
I'm wondering, you know, there are definitely, I've had patients, women who are HIV positive, and you bring up such an important point. I wonder why, I know now there's a lot more available, but why it took so long, and what some of the unique sort of issues that women face, you know, in being HIV positive, because we know that, let's say, a lot of gay men might be stigmatized, but I wonder what happens to women who come out about their HIV status, what kinds of issues they face in our society.
Yeah, women are very highly stigmatized, and in some cases, perhaps, if we talk about the Latina culture, I believe that women in that culture and that community are particularly stigmatized, and that's probably related to religion. But I will say that support has improved over these many years, and of course I'm looking at it from 19 years, you know, living HIV positive. Services have indeed improved, but I believe that for me, I was in my late 30s actually, and I was very afraid to go public. Lucky for me, I had a very incredibly supportive family, my mom, my dad, my sisters, and even though they were very concerned about losing me to actually having to witness me falling ill or perhaps even losing my life, they loved me, they checked in on me, they were always very interested in anything I was learning from my physician and maybe all the books and the magazines I was reading. And I'll forever be grateful to them for that. But I have met many women who have never disclosed their status to their families. We also have difficulties as a gender community with dating, for example. You know, this fear about rejection if I disclose, and how do I navigate condom use with this new person if we become intimate, and the burdens are quite great, I have to tell you. And yes, there have been strides made, but I have to say that after working with the HIV controller community for the past 7 years, day in and day out, that I have connected with, I guess you'd separate the genders into, my connections with women are only about 20% compared to 80% men. And it's a very courageous act for any HIV positive person to disclose their status to another human being. And when a woman gets in touch with me through the Zephyr Foundation and chooses to do that, I'm always very supportive of that decision. I've had some extraordinary conversations with people, men and women, and they're actually quite brave to reach out to a stranger.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I'm also curious what that experience is like for you about being an HIV controller. If you've experienced guilt over being a long-term survivor, and we're going to take a break in a moment, but also I want you to think about, you know, being a controller and having this secret inside of you, what that experience has also been like in dealing with and just knowing that about yourself.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that more after the break. I'm Dr.
Okay.
Howard Gless. If you want to email me, it's drhowardgless@live.com. This and all our shows available on podcast at radiodrgless.com.
For your organization or business to survive in these challenging times, you'll need cutting-edge information. The Keylight Company is a psychological business consultation firm. Keylight offers executive coaching, organizational development, seminars, ghostwriting services, and public speaking. Mention KFNX and receive a 20% discount. For business consultation, call the Keylight Company today, 323-935-5775. That's 323-935-5775.
We've been talking to people about the work being done at Child Fund, an international organization devoted to helping children living in poverty. Here's what they had to say.
Child Fund is there. They've been there for 70 years.
I love the work that they do by building a school where girls can get an education and not have to be married off at such a young age. It's amazing that Child Fund is caring in that way.
They always seem to be looking for a long-term solution.
Visit childfund.org. Child Fund. Innovative solutions, one child at a time.
From Chandler to Troon, the Elton Realty family has served the entire valley for over 20 years. Short sales, foreclosures, luxury homes, family court-appointed special commissioners, whatever your real estate needs, we do it all. Flexible fees, if not completely satisfied, opt out anytime. Call us today, 480-451-3318, or visit eltonrealty.com. That's 480-451-3318. Elton Realty,
your real estate survival guides.
When it comes to social networking sites like Facebook, you trust your kids but worry who they talk to online. For you, the challenge is to find the right balance between monitoring to keep your child safe without invading their privacy. At Social Shield, we strike the right balance. We're like an antivirus system. We'll alert you to suspicious persons and identify inappropriate posts and private messages being shared. And unlike traditional parental control software, Social Shield connects directly with the social network so it can track all activity. Visit socialshield.com or call 1-800-239-0120.
We're back with the show, and my guest is Lauren Willenberg, and we're talking about her status as an HIV controller. Lauren, before we go on with the show, if people wanted to find out more about the Zephyr Foundation, how could they do so?
We have a website, and that's just World Wide Web, Zephyr Foundation, and zephyrfoundation.org, and Zephyr is spelled Z-E. P-H-Y-R, and Zephyr Foundation is all one word, .org, and there's lots of information posted on our website. We also have accounts with Facebook and Twitter, and we even have a Zephyr Foundation YouTube channel that I invite people to take a look at. There are videos there of interviews with scientists, research scientists who conduct the many studies who focus upon our community. And it's really remarkable information, and I encourage everyone to take a look. Come visit us.
And I do want to remind our listeners, if you missed any of that, you can also contact me at drhowardgless@live.com, and I will forward that information to you. You know, we talked about this, Lauren, over the phone this week, and I said to you, you know, I wanted to, as a psychologist, I wanted to understand something. Mm-hmm. If someone who was an HIV controller walked into my office, what would I look for? What specific psychological issues do you think that they may be facing? Because there's so much being done and need to be done from the medical side. I don't see a lot of work being done from the psychological side. So I'm curious what your thoughts are around that.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I really agree with what you're saying, Doctor. For me, as soon as I recognized or that I learned after I joined that initial study back in Boston, Massachusetts in 2004 and understood a little bit more about the fact that, you know, I did have a robust immune response against the virus, that I also had a genetic disposition, protective genes. I don't want to get too much into the science of this, but as soon as I felt secure in the knowledge that, you know, I wasn't going to get ill, that I was able to contribute my samples, my blood, my cells, my tissue to advanced discovery on the research level, psychologically I started to think back about those, you know, 8 years where I felt like I might be the only one out there, you know, that was having this reaction to the virus.
A tremendous amount of isolation and loneliness.
Right, right. And actually now that I've spoken to several hundred of my community members, I understand that there is a general feeling of isolation within the community because they have a problem, many of us have a problem with identifying with the general HIV-positive population or even the HIV-negative population, but I think it goes kind of both ways.
Is there an animosity that you ever experience, that people are envious or jealous of your status?
I haven't personally, Doctor, but I have certainly heard stories from individuals who were literally outcast from support groups because of people's disbelief that they didn't need medications, or maybe it was a false positive HIV test, and individuals felt very ostracized and isolated. But on the other hand, they seem to be going through that process and still wanting to help, you know, and this is where the linkage to some of the clinical research studies is really taking hold. Back in 05, 06, and my friends and I were working hard to create this little nonprofit organization, the Zephyr Foundation, and actually being responsible for connecting upwards 300 or 400 people to several studies here in the U.S. and actually internationally.
I'm curious what people's reactions are to you when you speak. I don't mean to interrupt you, but there's so much I want to cover in so little time. I'm curious, when you go out and speak and you're an activist talking about this, two sides to this question. One is people's reaction just in general about how they feel about AIDS these days, and especially a woman speaking about it, and how they respond to you as being an HIV controller.
Incredibly positively. I've been embraced, I've been kissed, I've been hugged, I have been applauded, and when I think the treated population realizes that there's about 1,700 controllers around the world who are contributing valuable clues toward maybe new therapies or hope of all hopes, you know, a therapeutic vaccine for HIV infection, they're full of joy.
Because you are, as one of someone I was having lunch with today, he said, well, tell her she's the walking cure for AIDS. That secrets lie within your body. And I believe that's truly so.
I hope so. I pray for it. And I think that when I'm busy undergoing a procedure, what I tell people is I really hold the 30 million HIV positive people close to my heart. I know it sounds corny, but I pray that my cells, something, whatever it is that's going on in my body, eventually can be shared to reduce the suffering that other people are going through, and hopefully reduce the need for these highly toxic medications, you know, that people literally have to stay on for the rest of their lives to stay alive.
Yeah, and you know, I do want to applaud you, because as I wanted people to understand that this is not an easy thing that you're doing, and that you've dedicated most of your life to it, and I think it's just wonderful, and You know, I'm just curious, so curious about where you think we stand in this country when it comes to dealing with HIV and AIDS. Do you think we're doing enough? Should we be doing more? Because you're in such an interesting position. You get to be with those scientists. You get to hear their issues.
Well, you know, it turns out that I'm kind of their advocate as well because, you know, it's very easy to say that the scientists are staying in their ivory towers and that they're only interested in publishing their, you know, findings in peer-reviewed journals. But I have to tell you, in these last 7 years, and I'm talking about, I've been involved in 12 different clinical studies, I've actually seen them cry because they're so frustrated that they can't break the code. And then I've laughed with them. I've looked at cells. I've seen HIV under a electron microscope, and we kind of, you know, have our fingers up in the air crossed, and we're giving it the evil sign, you know.
Right.
And they're absolutely joyful to have recognized that there's a certain rare group of individuals that they definitely feel are contributing. We are contributing valuable clues, and you know, there's a whole lot of joy in that. I know I keep using that word, but when someone who is a research professional looks at you and says the same thing to me that your friend said today to you over lunch, I have to say that I believe it. And I do read these scientific papers. I'm immersed in it, even though I don't have a biomedical background in it. But these individuals have been very generous with their time and their knowledge. And I'm here to tell you that we're going to be seeing some amazing discoveries very soon.
And I want to say that we're about to end the show, but thanks to people like you that we are seeing amazing discoveries, because the quicker we can end this plague, the better off we're going to be. It's affecting so many people in so many different ways that, again, you going out there and doing this is such wonderful work. So everyone,
thank
go donate
so
to
much.
The Zephyr Foundation. I'm Dr. Howard Glessl, and maybe you'll help us find a cure to AIDS. I'm Dr.
Thank
Howard Glessl.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure having you on.
I've appreciated this conversation.
I'm Dr. Howard Glessl. If you want to email me, it's drhowardglessl@live.com. And listen to our show on podcast at radiodrgluss.com.
Hey folks, Jim Seward's here for Legends Cadillac with a special invite for all you party animals. The 2012 models are here, so it's time to celebrate. Starting Thursday, October 27th through Halloween, things around here are going to be downright scary. How about $10,000 off every 2011 Cadillac Escalade ESV? We've got the inventory and we've got the special lease programs, like a 24-month one-pay lease on an SRX for $11,400. Take full advantage of Section 179 and its 100% first-year depreciation, or the 2011 tax stimulus program available on every model. Every frontline used vehicle and SUV is on sale, and a special allotment of green tag blowout deals as well. Pumpkin pies, catered food, movie tickets, and more. It's party time. Don't wait. Legends in North Scottsdale or online at legendscadillac.com.
KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. News, weather, and traffic. Cave Creek, Phoenix. A division of Premier Radio Stations, LLC. It's 9 o'clock.